Hello, hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of Skeptics and Seekers Sunday Sermon Supplemental, and we are just going to keep right on going with where we left off with Andrew, except today we have Darren. How are you, Darren?
I'm doing pretty good.
Darren, this is a discussion made for you, because everyone else that I'm discussing this with has been a Christian, and you are the unicorn. So in this case, the question isn't why were you never a Christian, but I am presuming, and before I go too far, I just want to make sure that I am correct. Did you ever consider yourself a seeker?
I suppose it depends on definitions. The term's new, relatively new, and I've been looking at religious claims, not just Christian claims, but pretty much all the religions that I could get my hands on for the last 30 years or so.
Okay, so would you consider yourself having been a seeker? By your definition, whatever your definition is.
By my definition, sure. By any definition a Christian would recognize, probably not.
Okay, so help me understand your definition. And when I say me, I mean the audience. How do you define seeker?
I would consider a scientist a seeker, you know, someone who is interested in looking for how reality works, that has a method to distinguish fact from fiction, a reliable method to do so, one that has been shown to work.
Okay, and how would you define, how do you think that Christians define seeker? What is the definition you think they're going off of?
Well, I think there's two parts to this. There's what they think they're doing and what they're actually doing, as far as I can tell.
Okay.
I think they are looking for how things work. However, they don't have a reliable method to do so. And what it appears from the outside to be doing is just mostly confirmation bias, motivated reasoning. They've already decided what the truth is, and they're just trying to make the their arguments fit so that they can claim that they've got the truth.
Okay, so in terms of religion, and I'm going to just stand in for the Christian here and say a scientist is not a seeker. I don't think a Christian would recognize a scientist, biological researcher, anything like marine biologist. I don't think that they would recognize those people as seekers. I don't think that's what they mean. You're just a student. You're a student of, you know, certain disciplines. And I think that there is a distinction between how a Christian uses the word student or a studier of a discipline and seeker. So I do believe that you're right on that front. Any Christian who wants to take me to task on that, skepticsandseekers.squarespace.com, log in your discuss account, discuss away. So I think we kind of agree on that. So I think that from a Christian perspective, and from a lot of other perspectives, because it's not just Christians, seeker is more of a mystical term used for people seeking mystical things, whether it's religion or something in the metaphysical, nature, magic, or, you know, it something like that. I mean, it's not all Christianity, but I think that that's how seeker is mostly used. Would you agree with that?
I think so.
So with that idea of seeker, are you a seeker?
Not really.
I need a yes or no for that one, because I don't know what not really means.
No. Sorry.
Okay. So when you said not really, you had something in mind though. So why did you hedge there?
Well, I mean, I have been looking into the claims for quite a while now. So, I mean, there is some interest there, but it's mostly in a more of a anthropology type interest rather than a that I think it's actually real.
Sure. Okay. Same for me. More of a literary kind of a thing, maybe a touch of sociology, maybe anthropology, sure. I mean, it's we can't deny that Christianity has a profound effect on society. Religion has a profound effect on society. And so whether or not you agree with the tenets of any given faith, you can't dismiss that faith as unimportant. It shapes our society, and so it behooves us to understand the train that's, drive the engine that's driving our society and the train that's headed toward us when it all goes to heck. So, I think it's very important to study it and understand it. I don't think that's what they mean by seeker, though. It's kind of standing outside of it, studying it purely academically and not devotionally. So, what you're saying is, if we're talking about religion academically, you might still call yourself a seeker. But if we're talking about, searching some dark mysteries so that your soul can be enhanced in some way, you would say that you're not a seeker. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I wouldn't even know how to begin to search in any real way because no Christian has been able to provide a place to start. It's always, oh, well, you've got to believe first and then you'll start believing. So
Okay, so at this point in the discussion, I am going to flip the script. I am going to become a very disingenuous interlocutor. I am going to put on my Christian hat, which these days is more of a crown of thorns, and I'm going to clamp it to my head, and I am going to see if I can challenge some of your notions about seekering, and especially why you're not a seeker in the way that Christians mean right now. So I just want to establish for the record, you do not consider yourself a seeker as Christians understand it. Is that correct?
That is correct, at least the way I understand Christians understand it.
Okay. Why not?
The don't know, have you ever heard the rules of skepticism?
Probably, but help me out.
The first rule of skepticism is if you're going to try to explain something, there has to be a there. For example, whenever someone tries to, or I see atheists try to explain the 500 or the apostles dying for their religion or anything like that, I always have to shake my head because they're trying to explain something they aren't even sure actually happened. And so if you want to try to explain something, you have to first establish that there's something there to explain.
Okay.
And so far, I've never been presented with that. As far as I can tell, there is no there.
Okay, but how can you know that there is no there? How can you come to the conclusion that there is no there if you don't seek it out? If you don't delve deeply and honestly into the dark spaces where that you think are empty.
Fairly easy, actually. You just ask the people that have and see if they've come up with anything. And as far as I can tell, no Christian has yet been able to determine that there's a there. I mean, they
Okay,
assert it.
that doesn't mean anything, Darren. That just means that the average person is very bad at communicating difficult and deep things. The average person is not terribly educated. The average person is certainly not philosophical. They would not last in round one with even an amateur philosopher. The average person has no systematic theology. The average person could not interact on that basis. And so simply because they cannot give you a convincing answer doesn't mean that there isn't a convincing answer. It just means you're talking to the average person who might in fact be right about a truth that they can't explain.
So does William Lane Craig fall in that category?
He might. Okay, I'm just going to say that's too disingenuous even for me. No, no, he doesn't. But we also...
William Lane Craig's in the same position as every other Christian. I mean, he makes assertions. He's got, but when it comes right down to it, he's barely an evidentialist. I mean, it's just his own interpretation of his feelings of what he calls the Holy Spirit.
Right, but have you considered the possibility that what they are trying to explain from the most humble to the most educated is simply unexplainable? It must be found and experienced. And so, yes, even William Lane Craig kind of sounds like an idiot sometimes when he's trying to explain this. But you're asking someone to explain the taste of Skittles. I've got a bag of Skittles right here. I have contracted the rainbow.
Right, but you can demonstrate that the Skittles exist.
Yes, but I can't demonstrate that they're the best thing in all creation. I can tell you it is. I can try to explain the taste, but you're going to have to do some seeking if you want to come to the truth of Skittles.
Right, but the problem is that you can demonstrate that the Skittles actually exist. William Lane Craig can't demonstrate that the supernatural actually exists and that he experiences it. I mean, the experience and the existence are two different things. And you can demonstrate that the Skittles exist even if you can't describe how it affects you personally.
Well, but sometimes the experience is the demonstration.
If you can demonstrate that the experience actually happened, sure. But whenever you ask, I mean, it's like the genome guy. He became a Christian because he felt that a waterfall split into three that was frozen. Somehow that experience confirmed that God was real.
Right. You're making a reference to someone who was on Unbelievable One Time who said an incredibly stupid thing.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though, is when you get down to the experience, the reason most Christians aren't willing to explain their experiences to you, that only that they've had them, is because none of them are better than that three waterfall thing. It's always, oh, I feel this. But the problem is that they can't connect the feeling to an actual Holy Spirit or supernatural or anything else. All they can do is just assert it. And there's nothing I can do with just an assertion.
Okay, but you also can't connect sleep paralysis with something external either, but it's real. And people describe it in ways that sound almost supernatural and mystical. And for the lucky majority who have never experienced sleep paralysis, they simply don't understand. They think that people like me, who has experienced sleep paralysis quite a bit, and you have that feeling that you are awake, in fact, you are awake, and you have this sense of someone looming over you, some danger that is happening, but you can't move. You can't speak. You can't scream. Even as I try to describe it, it sounds crazy, but the experience is the thing. I can't point to a thing and say, this is sleep paralysis. Now let me explain it. Are you a scientist?
I am not, but
and neither am I.
But that doesn't mean that it can't be done.
Okay, it doesn't mean that God can't be demonstrated either. It's just, it may
right,
just mean
maybe,
that...
Maybe, but it's never been done.
No, but that just may mean that our scientists are incapable of doing it. The first
well,
moment
how
of...
How do I search something that no one can demonstrate is real?
But you can experience it. And that's
Yeah,
what I'm
I
trying
can.
to.
Okay, so how do you determine that I can actually experience it?
I don't
Because you're
look. Look, I
making the
don't.
claim that it can be experienced, but no one's actually demonstrated that that claim is in fact true.
I don't know that you can. So I don't know it's something universal that everyone can experience, but it's like sleep paralysis. Not
That's a
everyone
very
can
convenient excuse,
not
but it
everyone
doesn't
can
get me to,
experience.
but if I can't experience it, then I can't be a seeker, right? So trying to
No.
go into that shadowy world is completely pointless for me,
No,
right?
you can be a seeker. You can be a seeker even with sleep paralysis, even though it's something that you may not be able to experience. And you
Well,
can.
according to you, I can't, though, because if I can't experience it, and the only way to prove that it's real is to experience it, then I cannot become a seeker.
I didn't say that you could prove that it was real. I said that you could seek. You could be a seeker.
Well, if it's, the point of seeking is not to prove that something's real, then what's the point of seeking? Just to make an opinion about
But
something?
you see, as you say, we have figured out how to prove that it was real. But the first cases of sleep paralysis probably came with the cavemen. Okay. And there's no way that anyone could prove that it was real. It's probably
Okay, so
very re recently.
how do we get from your example of sleep paralysis into the supernatural? Where is that path from having this experience that we think we understand, or some people think they understand, to actually proving that it's a real thing and knowing the mechanisms of it like we do with sleep paralysis?
Right, but
How do we get over that bridge?
it might be a millennium before we can prove the supernatural. That
Okay,
doesn't
but
mean
if you
it's un
can't prove the supernatural, then how can you prove that the experience you're having is in fact what you're claiming it is?
I don't know that I can prove it. Like I
Okay,
said,
then how do I seek it?
it
If you
might.
can't prove it, if you can't give me that bridge from where you're at to where you want me to go, then there's nothing to seek.
Well, no, that's not true. It's not that there's nothing to seek. I can't prove it, and our science is too limited to prove it right now. It might take a millennium, like I said, before we can prove it. But like
Okay,
sleep paralysis,
but
that
then,
doesn't mean that it's not there. And if you have enough people
well,
saying
there's
they
already been
experience
2,000
it,
years.
okay, but it's 2 years, 2,000 years where we didn't have the science. There are a lot
Okay.
of scientific queries that might take
Right,
many
but if we're talking
millennia.
about the supernatural and people have been claiming to have experienced the supernatural for at least 2,000 years, probably the 200,000 years that humans have been in existence. Then how much time do we give these people to actually provide that bridge for us?
We
Another
give,
millennium, another
yes.
1,000 years?
Well, we
They've
give
already
the,
had 22, 22,
we give,
202,000 of them.
we give the science as long as it, as the science takes. We don't
Right, for
cut the,
something that's actually real, sure, but
well, but
they can't even
how
get
do
to the
you,
point where
how do you know it's
where they can show
actually,
that their experiences are real.
well, but they're not asking you to believe carte blanche in their experience. They are telling you that they are having an experience of something that they cannot fully explain or describe, and that science cannot prove yet, though one day we might be able to.
Right, but
And they are
whenever you go down to what
and
that
they are
experience is,
simply
it's
they're.
always like finding keys or a frozen waterfall. It's never something that can be demonstrated is a supernatural thing. And all they do is say, oh, I feel that this is a supernatural thing.
A
And
lot
then
of
when you remind them that their feeling is just chemicals in the brain, then they go off on a bunch of other things that they can't prove is real.
people have claimed more than just finding keys. So it's not fair to lump all of the supernatural claims into this kind of minimalistic, it's just, finding keys, or I prayed that
Okay, so
God protect me from
what's
an
the
accident
steel
and I.
man of the experience? What is the steel man of finding keys with this experience? What is it?
Well, I'm not going to summarize all of the things that people have claimed to experience. I'm just saying that there have
And see,
been
this is
more,
the problem.
there have been far more
If
robust claims than that.
okay, and see, this is the problem. When I try to get actual information, you're not giving it to me. So how am I supposed to seek? How am I supposed to explore this supernatural if I can't even get a straight answer?
Well, look, I've
So
never had the experience, and I may be incapable of having the experience, but because I don't dismiss the experiences of others, I mean, other people claim all kinds of experiences, like, they saw something that no one else saw. Well, maybe they did see something. I can't say that they did not. I can listen to what they say, and I can explore, through scientifically and through other methods, to see if I can get underneath the claim that they're making. That's really all a seeker is being asked to do. It's
well,
a way of
except
asking a person not to dismiss the honest claims of honest people over time, simply
except
because
they're not honest claims.
you haven't had the experience. How do you know
Except
they're not?
they're
How
not
do you
honest
know?
claims
How do you know that?
because they are taking an experience that they've had, and then they're combining their feelings of what they think that experience is and combining them together. And it's not the experience that's the problem. It's the explanation that they're giving to that experience when they have no way of knowing that that explanation is even possible. That's the dishonest part about it. I'm not saying that they're dishonest intentionally, because when they're in church and the people around them say, "Oh, you're feeling happy right now, that's the Holy Spirit." I mean, they are going to believe that if they don't actually, if they don't actually have an understanding of what feelings are or how they occur. But when they have these experiences and they feel happy and they call that the Holy Spirit, that is not an experience that's being honestly reported. What
Okay.
an honest reporting of that experience is that they had this experience and they felt happy. The jump to it's the Holy Spirit, that's the dishonest part about it, because they don't even know that the Holy Spirit is even possible in the first place.
Okay, so I'm gonna move on from here. I'll give you a chance to have the last word, but I would say that I think you're making the mistake that many parents make with their small children. Their small children have experiences, and small children are to a T, incapable of describing their experiences in ways that make sense. Many of their experiences, sometimes they can, and the parent can relate to that and they can do something about it. But oftentimes, children, they use the words they know and the figures that they understand, the metaphors that make sense, the things they see in the world, they use those things to try to explain what they've experienced. And I would go back to sleep paralysis. A child might tell their parents, "There is a monster in my room. I felt it. It was right above me, and it visits me every night. Someone is coming in my room." And the parent might just ignore that and wave it off because they're just a child and they're stupid. The fact is that child might be experiencing something very serious that the bad parent just waves off because it's just a stupid child saying muddled things. And I think that that can happen with Christians and other people claiming to have experiences that the rest of us don't understand, and we just wave it off and say, "Ah, that person is stupid. They couldn't even describe it in a way that made any sense." And they might be, in fact, experiencing something very real. You can have the last word on that, on this point.
I would say that having the experience and making a claim about what that experience is not the same thing as that experience being true. And if you're going to be a seeker, the whole point of being a seeker is finding out what is true. So if all you're interested in is the descriptions of experiences and what those people believe is the cause of those experiences, then you're not really being a seeker. I don't even think you're being a real seeker, even under the Christian definition of that, because all you're doing at that point is just gathering stories and opinions of people. You're not trying to find what is in fact true about those experiences. So to go back to the child, Sure, the child had an experience. The fear is real. The uneasiness is real. And you shouldn't discount that. However, the explanation that that fear is coming from a monster, when then that part can be dismissed because the child is not capable of producing said monster. And if you go in and you look for the monster, you're not going to find it. And if you study the brain and how it works, you're going to start understanding about how the brain produced those feelings and sensations of the monster for the child. So that's what I'm saying. I'm not dismissing the experience itself. I'm dismissing the explanation for the experience because there are better explanations for those experiences than something that can't be demonstrated to be real and true.
So I naturally have a follow-up to that, but I am going to keep my word. So you have the last word on that. Let's see if we can squeeze in another. So this is what you gave me when I ask you why you are not a seeker, but that can't be the only reason. Are there other reasons why you are not a seeker?
As far as the Christian definition of it, no, I mean,
Yes.
that's the reason. If you're going to try to experience something, you have to have a way to experience it. And if there's no path to get to the point to experiencing it, then there's no way to actually start on the road of becoming a seeker for it.
Well, it sounds like you've got the cart before the horse. Is that right? Cart before
The
the
horse before
horse.
the car, or the cart before the horse, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know how to get from A to B if there's a huge void between A and B.
Okay, but the problem is you want someone to prove that the thing they're seeking is real
They're the
before
ones
you.
that are
There,
claiming that it is,
you
so
want to
yeah.
prove that it's real before you seek it. And usually we don't find before we seek so that we can find.
Except there's people that claim to have found what they're seeking.
Okay, but I'm not dealing with other people and their claims right now.
Well, that's part of seeking, though. If I was the very first explorer, then obviously I wouldn't expect. I mean, if I was like someone trying to turn lead into gold and no one's done it before, but I think there's a I still have to find a path forward. I mean, if you look into the phenomena of alchemy, it's actually pretty fascinating. They understood that things changed, and so they had a way forward to try, they had a reason to believe that lead could be turned into gold, and they tried to find that path forward. And if we were in that situation, then obviously I would have to try to find my own way forward. The problem is we've got 10,000 years of people saying they've already found the destination. So if they can't provide that path for me, then I have no way of, I don't even understand the theory or thought process of the supernatural, how it works, how it's supposed to interact with the world, how it's supposed to produce feelings in someone. So I have absolutely no way to even get started in the seeking.
Have you tried to think about and figure out how you might seek something that is not yet proven?
Yeah, scientists do it all the time.
Okay, so you're saying that scientists seek things that they can't prove.
Maybe if I'm understanding you correctly. I mean, it's
Okay,
sort of like
so
dark
why?
energy or dark matter.
Right.
We don't know what it is or anything about it except we can measure it. It has weight, so we know it exists, but we have absolutely, beyond knowing it exists, we have absolutely no understanding of what it is. Beyond that, we've got some ideas, and
Okay.
we're testing those different ideas based on other things we know about how the universe works.
Before we discovered black holes, someone had to think about the possibility of black holes.
Mm-hmm.
We're inside 10 minutes. They had to think about the possibility of black holes. So, they right, didn't know, they didn't have any evidence that black holes existed.
Yeah, they did. The way black holes came into being was out of the math for things that we could confirm actually exists. Relativity, I think, actually. I wouldn't quote me on that, though. We had understanding of how the universe worked. We had the math to describe that. And then when you took the math in a certain direction, you came out with black holes. That's how they were discovered.
For some reason, I think that I'm thinking that Einstein was the father of black holes, but he came up with a way of testing a theory.
Mm-hmm.
If the test had failed, it would have, to many, disproven the theory of black holes, but it didn't fail. It succeeded. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's why we know, or feel pretty sure that we know, that black holes are real. Now, we have other ways now as our science progressed. But before that, you just had someone saying, I think there's black holes out there. I don't know that they call them black holes, but you know, I'm looking at the sky, I'm looking at the physics, I'm looking at the math, and it seems to me that what we're missing is this thing that I'm going to call black holes. And other people said, you're crazy.
Right, that math was the path from not knowing to knowing. That was the path. They had this idea that black holes existed because other things that existed in the universe produced the math that led to a black hole. It wasn't the discovery of black holes wasn't in a void. Someone just looked up one day and decided, I wonder if black holes exist. It wasn't like that. The math actually drove us to the conclusion that black holes existed. And then we tested that conclusion in part to see if the math was correct.
Yeah, I think that you're doing Christianity and religion a disservice by suggesting, by implying that they didn't look at the world around them and see things behaving a certain way and concluding that there must be something else going on besides physics.
I understand that that's what they're doing. That's the problem, though. They're not doing it in a reliable way to distinguish fact from fiction. That's the problem.
Well, how would you suggest seeking the unknown, the supernatural, the metaphysical?
But the problem is that when you say supernatural, you don't actually understand what you're saying. So let's say a rock falls, okay? You could say the supernatural causes the rock to fall. The problem with saying the supernatural causes the rock to fall, you could replace supernatural with magic, phlogiston, hoobity-doobity, and the statement doesn't change. There is no understanding of what it means for the rock to fall given the supernatural than any other word that you put in there. And that's the problem, is that when you say supernatural, no one actually understands what that means.
Okay, so your objections seem to be, well, we haven't proven it real, so why seek? And we don't have
not exactly,
and that we don't have a method for seeking, so why seek? How seek? And I would just, and I'm going to take the last word on this one because we've got 5 minutes left. I am going to suggest that perhaps the job of the seeker is to seek out, rigorously seek out, a better way of describing and discovering and explaining the supernatural, testing the supernatural. I think that we have maybe a paucity of good tests for the supernatural. And I think that seekers, quote unquote seekers, have to take the next step and go beyond their experience to finding robust ways to test and prove it. And I would agree with you that seekers have probably skipped some of that step, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be a seeker and take that mission up. So with that said, with the last few minutes, I'm going to take off my crown of thorns. Sorry about the blood. I want to go over your comment on the board, which no one has seen yet. I wonder, is the very fact that there are seekers, in quotes, evidence that God doesn't exist? So you are back to where Andrew and I were, which is a hidden God. And a hidden God is indistinguishable from no God at all. So if a seeker is seeking, then that means that this God is hard to find. So I thought about this idea for a moment. So let's just say that I have a cure for every disease, ailment, pain, and everyone who takes that cure will live minimum 1,000 years, no matter how old and decrepit you are right now. If you're alive right now and you get my cure, you're going to live 1,000 years. Let's further suppose that everybody knows I'm real. No one has to go through and wonder if I am real. So the only catch is I'm not going to tell you where on this planet I am. And if you want the cure, you're going to have to go through some serious detective work and seek me. I'm only going to give the cure to real seekers. And it might take you a day to find me. It might take you a year to find me. It might take you 30 years to find me. And many people will die in the effort. Many people will die along the way. Sorry, I require you to seek me. Everyone would say I was a dick. And when someone found me, they would take my cure and kill me, probably, because I am a bad man. Why is it better for God? Who you're not even going through that process. You got to go through the process of seeing if he's real. And then if you determine he's real, you've still got to seek him, look for him, search him in a journey that might take you your entire life. And you might die along the way, never having found him. You might burn in hell or whatever hell it is because you didn't find him, because God play this cosmic game of hide and seek, even though he had the cure to what ails all humanity. Are you kidding me? Your response for sir in the last 2 minutes.
Well, I would say that there's testable claims in the Bible. All loving. There's one in the Bible that says if you just have to look at the trees and know that I exist. Something about hidden properties. You probably know the quote better than I do. And that's a testable claim. And so if you have to seek out these invisible properties and you can't even demonstrate that the supernatural is even possible, much less real, even after, 10,000 years of human written history, then I think being a seeker still at this point is a fairly strong indicator that the God probably just doesn't exist.
Well, I agree with you. I just return to it's indistinguishable between non-existence if he's hidden. So less than a minute, I'm going to go ahead and cut it off and say, everybody, I'll see you in the comments. Bye-bye.